in Seattle, Seattle. And you need to buy yourself a home. We'll be right there for you, because we're the realtors that you can trust. So go to RodandConsidDow.com.
Don't go anywhere unless you want to. It's the Ron and Don Show, starring Ron and Don, and sometimes me, at ronanddon.com.
Hey, you guys, what's going on? Welcome to episode 718 now of the Ron and Don Show, and we are live in the Les Schwab Studios.
What is up, Ron and Don Nation?
Hey, coming up on the Ron and Don Show, yeah. How about a security fee next time you go to a restaurant? Wow. Also, many realtors right now are finding out in the Northwest are listing very low. Why are we doing that? Yeah. And what does that mean? What are the repercussions? As I say, real estate's actually down across the West, but it's not down here in the Northwest. So before we get to that, though, before we get to OJ, let's talk about this, because in the month of April, Ron, Les Schwab is doing something really cool, and they're our title sponsor here on the Ron and Don Show.
Yeah, they have moved their food drive from around Thanksgiving to right now, which is an interesting way to kind of focus stuff. Instead of doing back-to-back the food drive and the toy drive, they said, let's move it to April. And so what they're asking you to do is go to leschwab.com/Ron and Don. You can make a donation right there that goes to Food Lifeline. Or next time you're at the grocery store, you can pick up an extra bag of non-perishable food items, take it by a store and donate it. And this is a time of year where a lot of people with food insecurity, it's a big struggle. You're going towards the end of the school year when families, of course, that get meal assistance out of school, that for some folks drops away. And so Les Schwab is saying, hey, let's step up right now in April and do food for everybody. So you can go to leschwab.com/Ron and Don to find out more.
Yeah, really cool. What was that again? Les Schwab. What was that?
leschwab.com/Ron and Don.
Ron and Don. All right, let's all check that out. Hey, by the time you've heard, it's probably 2 weeks ago that this happened, that O.J., we haven't had a chance to talk about this, but O.J. Simpson has left the building and headed off to the graveyard or the crematory, wherever he's headed. I imagine the family would be very careful about burying him publicly somewhere, because we all know what that could turn into, quite a fiasco, because you never know what people are going to do when they show up at O.J.'s grave, because I think we'll all remember where we were when you think about the Bronco chase and what happened with his ex-wife and Ron Goldman, who was just stopping by to drop off a pair of glasses. And the next thing you know, Nicole Brown Simpson no longer with us, and Ron Goldman brutally murdered. He's acquitted, but then the civil trial happens, and I think there's a judgment of almost $33.5 million against him. He goes to jail for something else, trying to get some of his memorabilia back. He really liked to control that memorabilia because he didn't want Ron Goldman, Ron Goldman's father, senior, getting a hold of that money. And so that's one of the reasons why he continued to try to control his memorabilia behind the scenes. And he didn't want people selling his memorabilia, including his cleats, a Joe Montana football, and I think also the Heisman Trophy. What's really crazy about this is you think about the Pete Carroll era at USC, and not only did they have their national championship taken away from them, but then Reggie Bush ends up losing the Heisman Trophy. And he is now petitioning and suing to get the Heisman Trophy back. But at the age of 76, dead and no longer with us, guess who still had his Heisman Trophy? USC never took that away from O.J. Simpson, and yet they took it away from Reggie Bush. And now in the light of all the gambling that we see going on in college sports, and now in the light of everything that we see going on with NIL, Ron, I think what happened with Reggie Bush was happening with lots of athletes. I think he's the one that just got caught. And Pete Carroll was able to say, hey, I have no idea what you're talking about. I'm going to Seattle.
That is a weird one. And I think I'm on Team Reggie on that. Were you surprised at all in the OJ coverage depending on where you look. Like I when I first heard about it, I went online. I saw a piece from, I think it was Bob Lee of ESPN. And it was at least like they referenced the murders at the beginning and then did a very long stretch on his football career. So like the entire piece was maybe a 10-minute piece on OJ, but I would say a good 70% of it was about what a great football player he was, and the first player to get 2,000 yards in 14 games, and how he thought he was going to play on the West Coast, and he went to Buffalo, and like it was a slow roll through his Hall of Fame football career, and it was kind of bookended with, oh, and by the way, he was civilly liable for a double murder and did jail time for the thing that you just mentioned. And so on the sports side of things, it seemed to follow that template where you would just sort of bookend it with that, but talk about as mostly known as a football player and then as an actor and a pitch man for Hertz and all that stuff. And then on the newsy side, if you were at the New York Times or the LA Times or something like that, they seem to try to do a little bit more on the implications of his case and how it polarized a lot of people along racial lines in America. I was genuinely surprised that the sports outlets went so far into the football thing.
Well, it's a good point, Ron. I think the reason why that happens, because older journalists like Bob Lee, you're talking about Bob Lee from ESPN?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't read that, but just in knowing Bob Lee, he believes your performance on the field and off the field are separate, right? And there's a lot of old school guys that feel that way, except when it comes to baseball. And that's one of the reasons why Pete just can't get in, right? Because everybody looks at Charlie Hustle and they're like, man, Pete Rose, he just has had the inability to get into the Hall of Fame, and it probably hasn't helped him that he has become just kind of a crotchety, or would you say curmudgeon? It's very interesting. I actually like seeing him on Fox sometimes when he's on there with Alex Rodriguez and he's talking about baseball, because he knows so much about baseball. But I think our society in general and a lot of the writers, they don't like him. So, and when you look at O.J. Simpson, it seems like some of those old guys are like, yeah, whatever happened off the field, happened off the field, but let's look at his football career. I look at that and I say, well, the Hall of Fame, if that's where our heroes are going, number one, I don't believe playing football makes you a hero. I don't believe playing baseball makes you a hero. I don't think it's heroic. I think other things are heroic, but not necessarily playing sports. It's inspiring, though, and some of the great sports stories are very inspiring. But I think we just have to decide as a society, does it matter what you do off the field? And in this case, O.J. Simpson, you know, does it matter? And if it does matter, then maybe we should change our view and the way that we look at things and decide who's going to be in the Hall of Fame.
So. Yeah, it's a super fascinating case because I believe his NFL pension stayed in effect and that was protected because he had a residency in Florida. And so the NFL is going, hey, he wasn't convicted criminally. And so we don't feel like we can take away his pension. He earned that pension with the time he spent in the league. It was such a mess. Like, that entire story was such a mess. It's a fascinating legal case. You know, the Kardashian, elder Kardashian was in his thing, and Johnny Cochran was on his team, and, you know, Darden and Patricia Clark, was that her name?
Marsha
Clark. There was just a lot of characters. Cato Kaelin, I think, popped up when OJ died and had his little 15 more minutes of fame. So I don't need to reopen the Pandora's box on that, but I just found it fascinating that he was a pivotal figure in American sports and in culture and in the way we think about punishment and crime and the judicial system and how, you know, if you're famous enough, maybe race doesn't matter. But if you weren't famous enough, you know, who would have thought that he would get away with that?
Yeah, it's really interesting. And then he writes his own book, If I Did It. Who does that? And then you think about the other book. There was a Dallas author. We had our show a number of times, to talk about this case. And he wrote a book called OJ's Guilty But Not a Murder. It's a very fascinating book. And in that book, he points the finger at someone. And I have to say, when you get done with the book, you're kind of convinced that that person did it, even if they didn't, because William Deere is so convincing, was such a great writer. And he would come into our Dallas studios when we were doing radio.
It was a fascinating book.
Do you remember
him? I absolutely remember it. I won't give it away.
And I think that person may have ended up suing him for pointing the finger. And I think he may have lost a lawsuit for writing that book. And later on, when I followed up, because I want to talk to him later, he had passed away. But it's a very interesting book. who writes a book if I did it explaining how they did it?
OJ?
Yeah. The good thing was,
you've been juiced.
The good thing was, he was out in his golf cart looking for the real killer till the dying day. We will see you on the other side of this. It's Don here with my good friend Andy from Les Schwab. He's an Eastsider. We're not going to hold that against him. Andy, you guys are doing something cool. It's Food Awareness Month, the month of April. We're going to drive out hunger. We're working with Cairo 7, QFC, and Food Lifeline. You want people to head over to QFC, buy some food, and drop it off where?
We're taking those donations at all of our 83 Western Washington Les Schwab locations. You can do a monetary donation at QFC. But the biggest thing is we're collecting this food so that we can distribute it within our communities to help out the families in need in our areas.
Yeah. So don't forget, Cairo 7 Cares, our good friends at Food Lifeline, Les Schwab, and the Rhonodon Nation, we're all working together. You can donate your non-perishable food item at any of the 83 Western Washington Les Schwab Tire Centers. All food collected will be delivered to Food Lifeline to feed local families right here in our area. So join us, you guys. This is brought to you by Les Schwab Tire Centers, Cairo 7 Cares, and QFC. Les Schwab Tire Centers. Doing what, Andy? The right thing since when?
1952.
You nailed it. All right, so this is how real estate works. I'm at a Seahawks game, and I'm watching the Seahawks win the Super Bowl, and I'm in my friend George's seat, and I'm sitting next to my friend Mike Martin. Known Mike now over a decade. He calls me the other day, says, "Hey, I got a tech friend. He's in Hawaii, owned a property in Green Lake. He's going to fix it up." He went to Hawaii. He said, "I'm never going home." So he's had this rental now for 10 years. His name is Jude. So Mike puts me in touch with Jude. Jude calls me and says, "Hey, I got to sell this house." I call Scotty. We go over the house. And this house has a foundation problem. It has a roof problem. It has lots of problems. And in order to fix this house and bring it to market, it's going to take about $100,000. And then the house is going to be worth about $925,000. Anyway, there's a builder that Jude knows that says, "Hey, well, I'll give you $835,000. And then there's a neighbor that says, "Hey, I'll give you $850,000. And then what I did is I got on the phone with one of my builder friends, because again, I don't like seeing homes torn down, but there's some that have to be torn down when they have bad foundations, right? And this is a home that has to come down. This builder said, "You know what? I'll pay $1,060,000 for that particular house." So, case closed. There are builders right now paying more for properties than people are willing to pay when they step in and say, "Wow, this thing has a bad foundation. This thing is still in oil. This has a bad roof. There's a lot of work to do here." So while many homes I like to see restored, some can't be, right? So when you need us, if you have a piece of property, if you have an old home, it has a bad leaky roof, lots of deferred maintenance, call us. Because sometimes the best thing to do is to fix it up and bring it to market if you have the funds to do so. And sometimes the best thing to do is to create a new property and reimagine it. Because guess what? Here in Seattle, yeah, there's not a lot of property just laying around. So when you need us, whether it's wholesale, retail, investing, buying, selling, let's sit down. RhonandDonSitDown.com. All right, you guys, welcome back to the Ron and Don Show. Don't forget, if you need us, we're going to talk about real estate here in a minute. We also, every Friday, we do a real estate-only show. We're going to talk about specifically what's happening in the specific Northwest right now, as my son, when he was young, I like to call it, because what's happening here is, and I don't think it's happening anywhere else in America, is truly bizarre. So we're going to talk about that in a moment. If you're buying, selling, investing, we're here to help. In fact, Ron and I are going to do some sit-downs when we get done recording today. All you need to do is go to ronandonsitdown.com, and we can sit down with you virtually and talk about your real estate deal. Also, don't forget, we sell the sound. So we're getting ready to bring homes on all over the sound this spring. So can't wait to tell you more about that. I had to make draw a line in the sand last week because I was talking about Uber Eats and how expensive it is now here in Seattle to have them drop something off. And if you order something that is $40 or $45, by the time you check out, all of a sudden it's $90. If you have a couple people over and you order something, let's say it's $100, it easily becomes $200 and $221. It's incredible. And then we found out about all the fees that Seattle's charging because they want to make sure that Uber drivers get a fair wage. At the same time, when they come to the door, I'm really confused now whether I'm supposed to tip them or not because I don't know what they're getting paid and it's not disclosed. So to me, it's like, okay, is this like the restaurant thing where the restaurants here in Seattle, when you hit a particular price point, a particular kind of restaurant, they automatically take the tip in the gratuity, which usually I sometimes will add to that tip and gratuity. But at least it's kind of written out for you and it says, here's what you're paying. It's not that way on your Uber Eats receipt. So I'm a little confused by it. So I think the city of Seattle could help us out and make sure we know where all that money is going. And then Ron, how do you feel if one of these, if these drivers are now getting a fair wage, do you feel like you have to tip on top of that? And then I have to talk about something that's happening at an LA restaurant real quick.
I've really tried to pay attention to my tipping. And even like, for instance, now I'm thinking of coffee shops where I had a drink the other day. It was a $3 12-ounce just drip coffee, $3.60 or something.
That's cheap, $3.
Yeah. And so the tip thing came up and it was $1, $2, $3. Yeah. And I was like, no, I'm going to give you a 50-cent tip, which is more than 20%. Oh. So if I was in a coffee, if I was in a restaurant and I gave 20%. So in other words, like really thinking about this, like that's an exorbitant fee. Like it feels like, oh, it's only a dollar.
It adds up through the course of a year. Yeah.
So I think that I agree with you. If I had my Uber app, and this would be easy to program. So the Uber app should say, Don, here's your bill. The food is $38.
But Uber marks the food up, usually 20%, right. So they don't want you to see it.
And if they say the food is $38, Uber, as the platform, is getting $8. The driver is getting $6. Yeah. And the city of Seattle is getting $5.
There you go.
If it was listed out, at least you could go, huh, that's a lot of fees, but I really want this service, and so I'm going to do it. Or you could go, wow, I didn't realize that out of this entire tab that the driver only gets $6. Like, yeah, that seems crazy.
That's right.
Or I didn't realize that the restaurant's only getting $24 out of a $75 bill. So you could then be an informed consumer and say, this is for me or it's not for me. Or I can put my flip-flops on and drive down a couple miles and pick up the food.
Because the app on Uber Eats still reminds you afterwards, hey, do you want to tip your delivery person? And it's like, yeah, I think so. But what am I supposed to tip them? Because I don't know what I just paid, other than the fact that I'm never using Uber Eats again, because I'm just going to get in my car and drive. And pretty soon I'll be able to pay my son.
And I don't
He'll be more than happy to get in the car and drive in about another year.
I don't trust the fact that a fee collected by the city of Seattle is going to be used efficiently. I just don't.
I agree. So let me ask you this. LA restaurant, people are going ballistic because they're getting the bill. And now, because some of those places, everywhere.
It's a rooftop bar cafe place.
Yeah. So anyway, they are charging a security fee and they're passing that along to the clientele.
And here's where people freaked out. A, because no one ever had seen that before. And then B, it was a 4.5% on your tab. So, like, are you saying if I spent $200 that I deserve more security than someone that spent $100? So it's crazy. So California has this law where you are required to disclose this stuff, but restaurants, they're saying, restaurants are claiming, we are not in the goods and services bids or business. And people are going, how, what do you mean? Like, I'm going in, you're serving me food. Is that not a good and service? And so they're trying to circumnavigate this disclosure law, but the feedback on it is spot on. It's like, what, security is just included in life. Like if I live in a building or I work in a building or I'm attending an event, you're assuming that the building is secure, right? It's like if I go to a concert or a stand-up show like you just did, you're assuming that the building is secure. Like you don't have to pay an additional fee to have someone lock the door in the back. Or I don't understand the premise.
But
unless you're in a part of town,
if you're a rock and roll band, or you're like Jim Gaffigan was just in town, we went to see him. Those acts in those venues are paying for security to be there, so I'm sure that gets pushed along in your ticket price, especially after just a 45-minute performance. And I think he performed 7 times. That's really amazing. Good for him, because the place is packed and he made a lot of money. When you can just go out there with a cup of water and a stool and entertain a crowd, make people laugh, have them in the palm of your hand. Good for you that you don't have to travel with, you know, 150 semis like Taylor Swift does. So I think what's interesting about the security issue, though, and you see this when you travel to New York or bigger cities, I'm surprised we haven't seen this more here in Seattle. We're beginning to see it, where you walk into a Walgreens in New York in Times Square, everything is locked up, including, you know, a tube of toothpaste. Everything's locked up. And then there are security personnel that are there 24/7. In New York, they're not afraid to go hands-on with you. In Seattle, they won't, and they really can't. I watch security people's where my son will go and play guitar every week at the School of Rock. There's 4 security people that are in the Fred Meyer there, and there's a Tent City right behind the back of the store, and a lot of people from that Tent City come in all the time. And all those security people can do is sit there and yell at people, and there are people that walk in that store, they take things off the shelf, they put it in the cart, and they don't give up. Mm-hmm. And they just walk out the door with it because they know that they can. And it is shocking to watch, and the security people can do absolutely nothing except they're standing there with a gun and a taser and a security vest and all that. And those people know that are stealing that stuff, as long as they don't go hands-on with them, there's absolutely nothing those security guards can do.
And I'm sure that your toothpaste is a little bit more expensive there to provide for that extra security. I've just never heard of it in a restaurant setting as a percentage of your bill.
Yeah.
Like that part, I think. I think the fee creep really needs to stop. If it costs $16 to get your hamburger, and that's what it costs for that restaurant to make their bottom line work, then just put that on the menu. Don't make the burger $14 or $12 and then add 5 different fees to get it up to $16. Like, let us know what it costs, and then we can choose whether or not to go to that restaurant.
My friend posted something yesterday. He bought something online. He just bought it online. He put it in the cart and he checked out. And at checkout, they asked him for a tip. He went ballistic. All right, more in a minute.
Hey, it's Ron and Don here with Mitch Weeks. You know him better as Mitch.Loans. Mitch, you have a really cool new product for investors. I think it's kind of the first I've ever heard of it.
Yeah, so we have a great new investor cash flow program. And what this is we take the house you are buying and we inspect it, not you, the borrower. And so what we do is we look at the house and we say, will it cash flow? If you put 20% down, will it make more money than it's going to cost you to keep paying off your mortgage? And if it does, it's yours. It doesn't matter what you make on your own. It doesn't matter all these other things that we usually have to document. They don't matter. They're gone. It's just, does this house make sense? And if it does, you can buy.
All right, so you can go up to 4 doors, up to 4 units on this, and Don and I have never heard of a product like this. It's pretty exciting if you've been wanting to get into the investment game. So go to Mitch.Loans right now, set up a time to talk to Mitch, see if you qualify for this new program. That's Mitch.Loans.
All right, you guys, welcome back to the Ron and Don Show. Something unique is happening right now. In fact, I have some buyers I'm going to go see later today. We're going to go look at some homes. And they're targeting homes that are between $1 million and $1.2 million. And what we're finding is even if you find a house out there, like we found one in Ballard the other day, it was listed for $750,000, for $750,000, this house was. And it was... There was they listed it as 2,000 square feet, and they added a basement, which wasn't finished, and there were head knockers everywhere. It was on an old oil furnace, and there's no way that you could live in the basement. And there wasn't a heating source. There were no walls. It was very, very bizarre. And then somebody went in there with a bunch of 4x4s and propped up the porch, and then someone kind of added this weird bedroom on the back of the house. There's maybe 800-900 square feet of livable space, but on a beautiful, beautiful lot, probably somewhere between 5,000 and 6,000 square feet, which builders love. Builders love buying these lots now, because even if it's a single family home, they know that they can put a house or a house in a cottage or a house, a cottage in ADU. Basically, they can put a triplex on that in the city of Seattle because of some of the laws that have changed. So I know... Like and I got on the phone and I called a builder friend of mine and said, "Hey, I just want to check in with you. We're looking at this house that was listed for $750,000. Can you run some numbers for me? Because I think if they would have called you, and you've probably already seen it in the MLS, because it's on the MLS, you pay at least $1 million for this property." And he goes, "Yep. I would pay $1 million for that property." So fast forward, I don't know what the property sold for yesterday, but it was certainly over $1 million. And I'm going to guess it was over $1.1 million, heading toward $1.2 million. Ron, what is going on here? Because it seems like everything that we're looking at right now for our clients that are it's listed in the 7, 8s, and 9s. These homes are going $300,000, $350,000 over in Seattle.
Yeah, let's start with the optimistic perspective first, and then we'll go cynical. So the optimistic outlook is when you're setting a comparable price for a house, you're trying to see what a house is worth. One of the biggest methods, the traditional methods, is to look around the neighborhood at comps. So that's it's a rear view mirror looking statistic. And what's been happening in our rear view mirror? Well, for the past, couple years, we've had this a doubling of interest rates that did create a different dynamic in the Seattle market. So if you're looking back, and in some neighborhoods, there's not a lot of sales that happened for a while. And so you're like, I'd really like to get an appraiser is going to need at least 4 to 6 comps, as they're called, when an appraiser or a bank or an underwriter is going to try to put a number on a house. So you go back and you're like, all right, I'm going to go back 6 months. And maybe there's one thing. Like, all right, I guess I'm going to go back a year. And maybe now you have 4 things. All right, I guess I'm going to increase my radius a little bit. And so now you're going back a year and you've made it wider than you normally would have. And so to try to get your data points, you make your little spreadsheet. And you're like, okay, like if I'm using the comp method to come up with price, it says 750. And it's like, I don't think that's necessarily accurate, but I'm going to err on the side of caution. This is, again, the optimistic view. I'm going to err on the side of caution because a bank's going to need to come in here and double check my work. They're going to send an independent appraiser out here. And if it doesn't appraise for what I've listed, then it's an awkward negotiation in this deal. So if you're a really old school realtor, you probably use that. There are realtors that don't do a lot of listings. So maybe the last listing they had was 4 years ago and they just had it. This was a family friend or whatever. They list that house and that's the methodology they use. And they're very, very wrong. On the cynical side of the table, you have realtors that are real estate agents that deliberately price it low because it makes them look good. And the way it makes them look good is you have a client where you talk them into the number of 750 by showing them these comps, and then bam, you pop it over $1 million and they're ecstatic with that number. If you would have started at $1 million and then you had to do a price reduction, psychologically, that's a much tougher pill to swallow. We have a friend that, and I think you actually wrote on this house that it went over 40%. I talked with her and she's like, it was surprising to me. She's like, I'm pretty good at price. I did not anticipate 40% over. I wasn't trying to get 40% over. You know, I was, the backstory on that house is she had a family or a person in the neighborhood approach them to buy it off market, and they had kind of arrived at a number. And then they called her in at the last minute to say, hey, we're thinking about selling it at this number to a neighbor. She said, I think that's a mistake. Give me 1 week to bring this to market, and I think I can do better for you. So they said, all right, we're going to roll the dice. We'll give you a week. So she had to get everything done within about a week or 8 days, brought it to market, and then it went 40% over. So clearly they're thrilled, but they already had that anchor number in their mind of what the person in the neighborhood was going to come in. And so that's what, you know, they were thinking, this is the number because this person in our neighborhood gave us that number. So sometimes it's just crazy like that, and you don't know. If you get a couple buyers that want to compete and can be irrational, like we can't, that's the thing with all these statistics and all of these models, is it doesn't factor in if someone's just irrational. Sometimes people pay too much for things, and you worked at auctions for a long time with cars. Sometimes if someone's ego gets involved, they just pay too much. Like a car comes in, you know what the number is on the car, and you'll see two guys that maybe have bad blood, or maybe each of them is trying to be the big man on the lane, and they've got their glasses on and their fancy and they just want to show off to everybody, and they just pay too much. And you're sitting there going, that car's not worth that. But for them, it was an ego stroke, or it was it had some kind of value to them to perform like that in the lane. And if you get that on a house where there's two or three people that just want that, it can just go crazy.
Yeah. And I would say right now, you know, and this is the difference. When money was just cheap and people were buying everything, they were buying everything. So the stuff that's still sitting, if it's on a busy street, it still kind of sits. If it has a shared wall, it still kind of sits, right? So there's some opportunity there. And then also, if there's work to be added, if there's a place to add value, and it drives me a little nuts sometimes with some of my buyers because they say, yeah, we're handy and we can add value. And then they just keep picking out things that you can't add any value to because someone already added the value and they already spent the money and now they're asking you for top dollar and then you're afraid that you're going to pay too much. So aim a little lower in a market like this and add value to it. There's no reason why my neighbor right down the street, my new neighbor who bought this house from the gentleman that sold me the house that I'm currently sitting in, he's had crews in there since they bought it. They haven't moved in yet. And he's been there for the past month just adding value to the house because the house needed some things. And he got a great deal on that house because John was like, you know what? I just went through cancer. I was going to live between Seattle and Mexico. I don't know how much longer I'm going to be around. So my wife and I and our dog, we're moving to Mexico. We're selling this house. And we've made enough money in our other businesses, so it's not important for us to get the top dollar to do all the work to add value and then bring it to market. We're just going to bring it to market like it is and let somebody else add value. So those deals are still out there. So look for those deals where you can add value. Okay. Hey, you guys, thanks for listening to the show. If you need us as your realtors, your friends, your broadcasters, just reach out. Go to RonandDonSitDown.com. We also have a buyer playbook and a seller playbook. So we can send that to you. It takes about 20, 25 minutes to read it digitally. Read that before we sit down. A lot of time that is very helpful. We also are talking to a lot of people that are in the marketplace right now to be investors too. So we're here to help with that. House hacking. Buying a duplex, living behind one door, and charging someone else to live and pay down the mortgage in the other door, and then eventually moving out, pulling that cash, snowballing it. We can help you understand all that. All the short-term rental license laws, short-term rental licensing laws, they're pretty complex. We can help you step through that stuff. So again, buying, selling, investing, we're here, RonandDonSitDown.com. Thanks for listening to this episode of The Ron and Don Show. To get the nation news, check it out, RonandDon.com. More about the radio show, RonandDon.com. Everything about sitting down with Ron and Don in our real estate business, it's all under the banner of RonandDon.com. Keep your head up, shoulders back. We'll see you next time. You've been listening to The Ron and Don Show, live on the Ron and Don Radio Network.
Now keep your head up and your shoulders back and keep blowing that trumpet, and we'll see you next time.
Only.
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 Only
on the Ron and Don Radio Network.